If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Daily Cope says, hello, people of the regular chat. Is Joe Kent based or unbased? That is the question. And, you know, when I see him on this Mark Levin interview, first, Mark Levin is super impolite to him. And it's like they're talking over phone lines. Why would you talk over phone lines in this day and age with the whole... this audio processing that the telephone, the classical telephone does. I don't know. You need to move on to Skype or any sort of connections like StreamYard. Why would we still hear someone in a blurry telephone voice in 2026 on a show? That makes zero sense. Zero sense. I can't believe when I think about this as a streamer, because it's like we moved on to perfect audio transmission in like 2015. And really, it's always been these boomers who don't quite know how to set up their audio and their laptop that have been putting us behind. But we're in 2026 and Joe Kent is speaking on a telephone line to Mark Levin. And he won't let him speak. It's like he tries to go for a sentence, and Mark Levin is already intervening and stopping his sentences. But in the end, I feel like this system, the Mark Levin of this world, the warmongers, they're pretty comfortable with Joe Kent. They're pretty comfortable with Joe Kent. Because Joe Kent, ultimately, is only a very pointy opposition to the system. He doesn't question the entirety of the 30 year of work that the US and Israel have done in the Middle East. He is even siding with the bombing of the nuclear sites. So he's really just annoyed at the specific regime strike of Trump. That's the latest one. And I think that the warmongers, they love this. And Mark Levin loves this. That's the sense in which Joe Kent should still be considered control opposition, even if he could yap a couple of things in line with what we believe in his letter. Down the line, and controlled opposition is a very broad term. It can include just literal agents of the system that are falsely claiming publicly that they are against something. I wouldn't say that I have evidence that Joe Kent is that style of controlled opposition, a paid for employee agent of CIA. But he's definitely a controlled opposition in the sense that he is an opposition that the system feels comfortable with. So CPDSD Spurg says, Jeff, do you think you can keep your children from hedonism? So many fathers have tried to keep their women from being Chad-only whores, and it doesn't work. What will you do if your children don't? Well, my key approach to this is first you have to accept that you have a limited control over the next generation. But you have so much more control also than what people think they have. So it's like, I'm not a controlling man. And I can accept, because I make a lot of babies, I can afford the luxury of thinking, you know what? If one of my children turns bad, it's not dramatic. So already there's a there's already something to gain very much in the first ingredient is make a lot of babies. If I look at my grandparents having 10 babies and something like this, does it matter that one becomes a priest? Does it matter that one becomes gay? Not too much, really. And so it's much less dramatic when you're in that range of reproduction. If you have one or two children and they become gay, your entire line of descent is erased. So that's a big cost. And the first ingredient is make a lot of babies. And suddenly these things start to matter less. Now, yes, there are ways in which you can guide children in life toward the right directions. And one of these is limit horizontal exposure that you do not control. So children will not receive massively bad influence from friends that you have selected. So hang out with the friends that you select and don't have these 8-hour streak in the children's life where they are completely out of control and they are being exposed to whatever it is that the elementary school teacher decides for them. That is where the evil happens. That is in uncontrolled scenarios where someone else who doesn't have your genetic interest at heart is controlling what the child is exposed to. But children don't turn wrong under controlled situation. They vastly will just converge toward pursuing their own interest, including pursuing a heterosexual lifestyle. So it's not like you have to insert it in their mind. You mostly have to fight the demons. You mostly have to make sure that the bad stuff doesn't pass in. And that is relatively easy if you have control. If you have something like homeschooling and controlled friend networks. Those are the two keys. Other than this, you don't have to educate your children into heterosexuality. You really don't. Nature is really, really powerful. And understand something. To misguide entire generations into self-destructive lifestyle took enormous amount of efforts for the left. It's like they might not recover from it. Like the way they've ridiculed themselves with the trans stuff and the LGBT ideology, they might never recover from it as long as they remain attached to it. They might have to eventually disavow it. But you don't need to have courses in heterosexuality for 18 years for your children to move on with life with a productive outlook on life. And no, you don't need to educate them about how OnlyFans is bad to make sure that your daughter doesn't become an OnlyFans whores. The path that leads to becoming an OnlyFans whores is an extremely limited set of events that it's like at any point in time you could have stopped it. But because these women, they end up on OnlyFans, they end up whores because so many things went wrong along the way. But if you had just a little bit of care and control, and I'm not talking about punishing them, I'm not talking about high authority parenting, just talking about reasonableness. Just a reasonable, normal development path will not lead a woman to get into OnlyFans. Won't happen. There is, when you see the path of these people, like I think of Anna Hayes, who has turned into porn, and I interviewed her on this show. What leads to a Hannah Hayes? Absence of fathers, poverty, and neglect, basically. So if you can just knock down one of these three or the three as a whole, you're not going to get OnlyFans daughters. Doubting Thomas sends a super chat, $20. Thank you so much for the generous support. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, you can use the Streamlabs link in the description below. Streamlabs is my favorite platform to receive support for the show, or use the super chat option on YouTube. Doubting Thomas says, dear creator, our automated simping detection software has raised an exception flag on your recent content. Note that this may be subject to claims of dudes before dames by affected parties. Disregard if it leads to new babies. Well, yeah, so yesterday's commentary, I think it was a good show. I'm very proud of the comedy we've done yesterday on the Rebecca and David Riley separation of their podcast. And the fact that David Riley has been pursuing copyright strikes on the channel of Rebecca. So I don't have much to add tonight because I don't want to be hostile to any of the parties in this. I'm actually working in the background to try to come to a resolution. But I will update, though, what I was saying yesterday, because David Riley published a message saying there is more than one side to the story. He claims that he was legitimately copy striking those because the copyrights were owned by the Backlash LLC partnership, which he became a leader of now that Rebecca is gone, that Cameron and Rebecca, at least Cameron, seems to have taken money out of the account unilaterally. I am absolutely hearing the side of David Riley here. Okay. And I am hearing the side of Rebecca. I don't have much of a judgment. Separations are always tough, and there's always someone who estimates that they should have money and the other think, no, that's my money. All of this is not something I have judgment on either side. What I'm trying to do in private with them is, how do we get the voice of Rebecca protected? How do we get these copyright strikes removed? And this is what I would like, because I do think that maybe there's a legitimate copyright claim on the side of Dave Riley. But there's a difference between, you need to remove these videos because they're now ours, and I will destroy your channel and you're going to have to restart a channel. And I don't believe that Dave is evilly pursuing this destruction. So that's where I see an opportunity to negotiate and be diplomatic. I just hope that we don't have another destruction of a YouTube channel, because I think that whatever the disagreements were politically between this crew, I do believe that the voice of Rebecca should be protected. And as I was expressing, I think there's an unwritten rules of YouTube that you don't pettifully, vengefully destroy someone else's channel. But as I was explaining to them also, I did it before. I destroyed Nick Fuentes' channel, but I don't know if my actions resulted in the destruction, but I did reports out of a vengeful desire against Nick for purely petty and personal reasons. And then I had to apologize to Nick Fuentes. And so sometimes you have to think, not just am I entitled by contractual law in claiming a copyright strike? And on the other side, am I just vengefully, pettifully destroying someone's channel for what is ultimately just a personal conflict with them? So that's, I'm not going to comment further until we see resolution. But I do hope and I do hear reasonableness on the two sides in there. And my goal in the end is, let us damage control all of this. Because, of course, yesterday I did a 1-hour comedy sketch about all this, which culminated in me having sex with a mummy. Okay, that's. But in the end, I want speech for everyone, and I don't want people to be offset by in their YouTube popularity or progression by personal issues. And so I do hope that, and I do think it does look like everyone involved in this is not as hateful as you would think they are, and not as evil as you would think they are. Ty Rogerson says, and then the mummy watched the episode. Yes, yes. Live streaming is kind of wild. You have to acknowledge. Live streaming is kind of wild because if you were making a joke in the 60s, you were distant from anyone and they would have to call you on the phone to talk about your joke. But when you're doing a joke in 2026 on a live stream, it's instant and the person can be in the chat. But yeah, Rebecca has been saying that she has enjoyed, and that warms my heart really. Rebecca has been saying that she deeply enjoyed the comedy of yesterday. So it's hard because I know I'm fucking autistic, and I appreciate humor at the edge of acceptability. I'm like right there in the corner, and it's like I'm always wondering, can I go there? And so you know, yesterday I started with a couple of jokes of simping around the beauty of Rebecca, but then she makes a reference to her deathbed in the regular chat, and I'm like, oh god, now we have a deathbed. Now we have the body of Rebecca, and holy shit, she's still beautiful. And it's like, I'm like, no, Jeff, you can't make a joke about fucking her at her funeral. And so my brain is like, how do we resolve this? I have to have sex post-deathbed moment, but it cannot be that disgusting that I'm just zinging onto her in the funeral. And so I'm like, it has to be 1,200 years in the future at least. She's been mummified. All of her family is dead. There's no one to be crying about it. She's in a museum. Now that will be funny. That will be acceptable. So that's how we got, we ended up in the mummy situation in a museum. Chronic Boom says, nice to see you still getting along with LP and Blonde and even Nick after all these years. Absolutely, absolutely heartwarming. Sacred Soma says, your rendition of Aerosmith was Hayes. Thank you, thank you. So now we have Squirrels Vaping e-cigarettes after mistaking fruity aromas for food. I don't think it's merely the aroma. I'm pretty sure there are leftovers of nicotine in there. Pretty sure these squirrels are literal nicotine addicts at this point. There's been various reactions to my jokes of yesterday. Some people came to me and they were like, Jeff, you're simping. I don't know that that's simping, by the way. To adore the female body, I think we have to return to sexualizing the female body. Simping is another thing. Simping is when you give them money and you, like, literally you spend large amounts of your revenues just being a slave to these females because they show their beauty on screen. That's a different thing. I do believe that that we have to restore the adoration of the female body on the public space, precisely so that we know that this is the game. Like, we can create our reality for civilization. And one of the big issues with the current world is the denial that anything is about sex, when in fact everything is about sex. So I'm here to fix this. And one of the ways you can fix this is through comedy that implicitly, and everyone knows, that is one of the most heartwarming reaction of people to yesterday's clip. They know I'm right. It's like no one, literally not a single fool on the internet is claiming, no, JF, Rebecca is not an 11 out of 10. That's kind of out of the question. It's like you wouldn't want to be stuck in that bad argument. So it's like everyone knows I'm right. Everyone knows that the world is about reproduction and that the world is about sexual tension. And everything we do, even work, this is where the liberals deceive themselves into thinking that the work is the end of it. So, oh, I got a job. Oh, I got hired there. Oh, I'm a social worker working for the government. You missed something in life if you don't find a way to convert this into babies. And no, it is not the end of it. It is not something you should even include as a realization in your life. None of it matters. Down the line, the measuring stick is how your dick got wet. And not wet through birth-pilled, sterile woman. Wet with humid vaginas that are reproductive with valid uteruses. This is the standard of success. Ty Rogerson says, wages are so proud of their W-2s. Yes, but that is a very Marxist thing. I remember my early days in college being exposed to Marxist philosophy. And Marxism defines the worker as kind of the end achievement of the human. The human is a worker. And that's how it reaches all of its conclusions. And when we are today, we can look back and say, oh, so down the line, when you accept that you're a worker and nothing else, that, by the way, I have nothing against work. Work is good, but you have to work to be a father. You have to work to be a provider. But if you accept that the work is your product into society and it's the end goal of you, down the line, it leads to antinatalism. Because what's more productive than a worker who doesn't even want to have babies? Because from the perspective of Marxism, inevitably, the investment that you will make on your family is a loss of time. It's a waste of the energy of what could have gone into your work. I'll empty my nose. I'll be back in a minute. We have a super chat from Lutrop Evola. Thank you very much for...
Man having a beautiful co-host like Rebecca. Would the situation if you had a young hottie co-host like Lauren Rose? You talked about the sexual dynamics of a man having a beautiful co-host like Rebecca. What would the situation if you had a young hottie co-host like Lauren Rose?
I have said yesterday that I would come 50,000 times inside Rebecca. I would look at her in the eyes and say, sorry, darling, it's not about what you want or what I want. It's an obligation of the universe. 50,000 times. Now, Lauren Rose is something else. It's I don't know how to scale these two women. Lauren Rose is a fucking top beauty at a young age. Fresh, perfect. I don't know. I have to put them both on a podium of absolute perfection. I would equally come inside both of them. If I had a 50,000 ejaculation budget, I might divide it. I might run a Monte Carlo random, like forest tree of decisions. Maybe, I don't know. Two episodes of sex with Lauren Rose, 5 with Rebecca, 7 with Lauren Rose, rotating between the primes. I don't know what I would do. I would have to come with a system that spreads the trade-off that we're talking about here. But when you're talking about top beauties like Lauren Rose and Rebecca, things become really hard. Things become impossible to decide. That's where the human brain just gives up. It's like you need a machine. You need AI. You need to say, Grok, what do I do now? Chronic Boom says, but Lauren was mostly remote. JF didn't have to withstand the physical presence of hotness, right? Yeah, so as someone was saying yesterday in response to my clip, if I ever collaborate with Rebecca, it might be better if it's remote, because then there's the internet condom. Definitely, I was never able to have sex with Lauren Rose because of this. So definitely there is a form of cock blocking that is kind of a reassuring thing of the internet, where you can interact intellectually with a married woman and you know it's not going to turn physically sexual. Sadie Edwards says, Lauren is a brick horse, hard 10 smoke show. Oh yeah, man, these women of the internet, some of the great ladies that have been speaking for the right wing across the years, all of them are extremely beautiful. It's amazing when you think about it. It's amazing the amount of beauty we've been blessed with. It's you can go on a porn site right now. Go on a porn site. Go on Pornhub right now and try to find just a single woman on the front page who looks better than the top 15 right-wing speakers, ladies across the year. Not a single. They're all ugly. It's like they're all desperately trying to show everything about the female body, and in the process, they lose a lot of their beauty. It's disgusting. Go on any of these sites. It's disgusting. Because they're really not top females, really, and they're really showing so much of what we don't necessarily want to see. Chris Hassler says, Jeff, what is your view on Aaron McIntyre? I think he's a great guy. I've not watched massive amounts of his content, but whenever I'm confronted with a piece of it, I think this guy is a big thinker. He seems intellectually opened. He seemed to be kind of shy in his... And I think he was on Tucker, right? I think I remember the latest Tucker interview mostly. He seems like any of these Christians, just a little too Christian for his own interest, a little too open to accepting everyone on the basis of this Christian doctrine. I think it's a very bad aspect of Christianity. It's an actual weak spine of the Christian philosophy. End of the line, Joel says, he's with the blaze, he hides his power level. Yeah, but then definitely when you see his tweets, you realize, okay, he's kind of flirting with some degree of ethno-nationalism, at least awareness, and that's already a start. Sean B says, why do porn ads force you to see these nasty women? Makes me want to throw up and not out of my dick. Oh, yeah. Well, the whole porn, I don't get it. I don't get it. The porn milieu, because it's like, you know, 99% of what's out there is very, very ugly woman. Why do we have so much? It seems to me that porn, if it has to exist in society, should be subject to selection. Why don't you find the most sexy woman you can ever find, film one scene with her, and then that's good for everyone? But no, porn has declinated into all these special interests. It's like there's just too much diversity. And that's the point at which diversity becomes a flooding of bad stuff. It's like there's always this opposition between elite and average. And porn is very, very average these days. it's always been. I can't even remember, even on VHS. I can't even remember a time at which porn was a thing of beauty. It's always been extremely ugly. Thomas Howard says, it's been a long time, JF. Much has changed. Good to see you, Thomas. Of course, you are one of the old school watchers of this show. Always good to see you. He says, I wonder how many of your 26 treaties for the improvement of his online presence were implemented by Nick Fuentes. I wonder if that show content even exists anymore. I think you should find it on Alt Censored. This is when I did a kind of Machiavelli counseling to the gripers, because they were dropped under the bus precisely by the TPUSA Charlie Kirk type guys. And it's fascinating everything that's been happening since when you think about it. But that was the rejection of the gripers by a mainstream establishment, Charlie Kirk-led type of movement. The Iranian Red Crescent has released a video of rescue workers retrieving a child and his father from rubble in Tehran. So we have these constant videos. There is human suffering caused by these U.S. and Israeli strikes. There is also some degree, I believe, of destruction in Israel by the responses, by the missiles in response from Iran, though it's very hard to tell in Israel which video is right. And that tells me that there is a genuine control of information leaks by the Israeli side. They don't want to show much videos of destruction because they've realized, I think, that too many people are rooting for the destruction. So I think at this point, the media specialists in Israel, they've understood that we cannot show too much Iranian missile destruction because it gives them a validation that they've succeeded at striking something. So you have this bizarre situation where we have difficulty actually measuring the bilateral damage in this war because the two sides are not necessarily invested in being transparent about how the other side is succeeding. But we have new claims that are in line with my prediction that indicate that Israeli media claims that the U.S. plans to establish a one-month ceasefire with Iran. But we have this very mixed messaging from Iran, Trump saying we are in discussion with the right people in Iran. What does that even mean? Is Trump actually speaking to maybe forces of revolution in Iran? Is that the people with whom he's making peace? Or is he talking to, I don't know, powerful people within the regime? Or is he talking to the new leader? Very unclear to me what Trump says, what it even means. But it seems that Trump wants something of a break. And that tells me whatever it is that the channels that he's using or that he's thinking of using, he has a desire to put an end to this situation, at least temporarily. But then the question is, will the Iranian side let boats pass? Will they want to let boats pass for a mere ceasefire? Because it seems mostly that what the U.S. side wants is the boats to pass in the Strait of Hormuz. They want a break of this. So it seems to be that because we are in the revenge part of the Iranian strikes mainly, I think that the U.S. and Israel have accomplished the first wave of strike that they were thinking about and that they had in mind. So at this point, they don't have much short-term projects of strikes within Iran. So they're asking for a ceasefire. But Iran, on the other side, is interested at revenge for the strikes that have already happened, that have fucked up their regime. So it will depend. Are they interested at letting all boats pass in the Strait of Hormuz, or are they not? And yes, they are currently tariffing boats $2 million, and they are saying that the boats that are associated with countries that strike Iran are not to be let to pass. So, I mean, will they want to bend on this? That's the question. Very often we get Trump saying, oh yeah, they are about to bend on this and we have a deal and we'll have a ceasefire. That's what the US and Israeli side are pushing. And then we have Iran, sometimes the official voices of Iran saying, no, we're not in these talks. Who's lying? Who's deceived? Who's talking about who? Maybe we're talking about a misunderstanding of the decentralization of Iran. It's possible that Trump is speaking to people who don't have as much power as they believe they have. I don't know. I have no idea. But we do know that Mark Levin is a bad interviewer. I mean, this was unwatchable, literally. Mark Levin is currently complaining on Twitter that his interview with Joe Kent didn't drag any media attention. Bro, even by my standard, I'm a homemade, self-made streamer with my own equipment, nothing professional. By my standard, this was bad recording, bad interaction, bad respect of the guest. I can pick any time in this interview. I can literally choose at random any time, and you'll hear Mark Levin cut off Joe Kent.
Other things, and you say it was Israel. Explain.
The Israelis launched the attack, and we knew that the Iranians would counterattack. That is the only imminent attack was actually the Israelis launching the attack. So that's what got us into this.
That's been denied.
That's been denied. And we have a low voice Joe Kent on a landline phone. And we can't get more that's the longest that Joe Kent has spoken in this interview, which, by the way, starts with 15 minutes of Mark Levin blasting Joe Kent and saying, these media reports are saying this. I don't know. We'll ask him. There's also these media reports that are saying this. And at the end of it, he's like, well, I do hope that when you say that's not true, that it's not true. But they still say this. And it's like, we don't care about media reports that come from your fucking circle jerk, warmongering associates of newspaper that come from anonymous sources in the governments are saying that. If you have any evidence, share it. But what Mark Levin has been doing throughout this interview is raise the smoke of the allegations. Well, Axios is saying this about you. You would have leaked some stuff according to anonymous sources. This type of journalism that is self-referential, people are getting tired of this. That's why the entire cable TV world is dead. It's only being maintained alive by the last few boomers who are still hanging. Like, Mark Levin is literally doing this radio show. He's literally on the radio interviewing Joe Kent with a landline phone and referring to Axios as anonymous sources in the government. We've had this shit, Mark Levin. We've had enough of this shit. We know what this is. This is self-referential construction of lies. Clearly, Joe Kent has been identified as potentially hostile to an immune system, the immune system of the mainstream media. And they have responded in the exact same way that they do every time. Ruin their reputation, get anonymous sources to say something about him, and run on it. Now, I still consider, despite all of this, despite that Joe Kent is being targeted by the immune system of the mainstream media, of the warmongers, I still have doubts about this guy and his curly hairs. What about these hair, bro? Did you get, I mean, this is curly as fuck. And on top of it, Joe Kent is showing all of the signs of being very welcome, actually, in this circle. Like Mark Levin inviting him on his radio show. Would Mark Levin have someone who's actually an opponent of the entirety of what was done in the Middle East for Israel for the last 30 years? Or does he want the easy story? Because it's very easy to take a Joe Kent who's already locked in. Joe Kent has his hands locked. He was leading America's war for Israel for 20 years of his adult life. He was at the front line fighting for Israel against Iran. He has supported the bombing of the civilian nuclear sites of Iran. So when you are locked like this, and your only real opposition is, well, that particular strike that Trump did last time, that was too much. But it's okay to invade Syria. It's okay to do psyops to control countries in the Middle East. It's okay to deny sovereignty to all these countries because Israel demands it. It's okay to spend thousands of American lives and trillions of dollars in maintaining the siege against Iran for 20, 30 years. It's very hard to have a credible opinion that you can sustain against a Mark Levin, because then you've granted so much. You've granted so much to Israeli power once you've accepted all of this. It's very hard down the line to say, but this particular strike of the regime of Iran was bad. How can all of the rest be good if that one was bad? How can the preparation, how can the foreplay be bad if it led to sex? Or in reverse, how can the sex be bad if it was initiated by good foreplay? Like, there is a point at which there is a causal chain between events and you have to endorse them all or reject them all. It's very hard to root for American denials of sovereignty in the way Joe Kent does, and then turn around and say, but that one extra step that was striking Khamenei, that was passing the red line. Chris Asler says, Jeff, are you familiar with the political philosopher known as Carl Schmitt? And if so, what's your view on him? Also, what's your view on his particular philosophical concepts? I don't know. I've heard his name, but I don't remember, and I don't know much about him. I would have to have Grok do a summary before I even remember what he was about. DK Shadow says, layers of faux opponents are the best. You have options and redundancy. Exactly. So that's what I see the system doing right now with Joken. It's to be able to argue, look, we've engaged with an opposition. But that opposition is effectively agreeing with you on 99% of the stuff. Is that really opposition? I don't think so. And the fact that they're doing it so hard with Joe Kent, so hard to paint him as an opponent of Israel power tells me that this is a campaign of gatekeeping of some sort. And the way they are readily inviting him on these shows, where they have been hostile to any opposition to Israel, like it's not, you're not going to get a deep opposition against Israel on Mark Levin's show, but you're going to get a Joe Kent. And in that sense, that's controlled opposition. ELDR says, if any of the new, of the mainstream podcasters, newscasters, or journalists actually wanted to interview authentic opposition with real arguments and intentions, Nick and others like him would be booked. Exactly. There's a reason why they don't go as hard against Joe Kent in terms of denying him platforms. And that worries me a lot. Because we're talking here about the campaign of replacement, really. Sanglier Halal says, you are the French guy in the Epstein files. Bro, I am. This is me. You have reached the final bus, really, of the final bus of Frenchhood. I'm him. What do you have to say? Go ahead, throw your best that you got at me. So Trump is very unstable in terms of what he's pushing, and the Iranians are kind of mocking this. They're kind of they're saying we're receiving mixed messages. The Strait of Hormuz is open, but it's not. We've won. We've destroyed them militarily, but the boats can't pass. We've effectively finished the war, but you're seeking peace or a ceasefire. That doesn't sound very much like an effectively finished war. If the war was effectively finished, you wouldn't be soliciting a ceasefire.
Great. The border is great. The military is great. We're having, by the way, a tremendous success, as you know, in Iran. We had one in Venezuela, and now we're having one in Iran. They have no Navy left. They have no Air Force left. They have no anti-aircraft equipment left, no radar left, no leaders left. The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people, and they want to make a deal so badly.
That's a key phrasing. We're talking to the right people. No one knows who to talk to, but we're talking to the right people. Those are classical Trump self-contradictions. And they always reveal something about what Trump is actually trying to say. Trump will allow himself, he's the only man I know of in public communication who will allow himself just self-contained contradictory statements next to each other. No one knows who to talk to, but we're talking to the right people. Well, then you would know. Then it wouldn't be no one who knows who to talk to. There would be at least you who knows to talk to. But what these self-contradictions always revealed is what Trump actually is trying to display. Trump is trying to display that he has a special in with something in Iran. It's not clear what it is. Is it the official new regime from the death of Khamenei? Or is it something else? Is it a force of revolution? Maybe a cell of resistance? Is it... Not clear what he means. But he's trying to say that he has a special connection with a special group within Iran. And that, I don't know, do they have power? Are they bullshitting him? Because on the other side, the official voices of Iran are saying, no, these peace talks don't exist. We're not even in those talks. But also, Iran can be lying. President Trump says U.S. is in negotiation with Iran right now. Okay. There was this meme that was quite hilarious. There's our little doomer. Why don't you come downstairs and tell us what current event we should be worried about today? Ha, 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 ha. And you have to imagine the doomer guy on his computer all day saying, oh no, it's going bad in the world. Oh no, I don't like the smell of it. Lots of Iranian strikes. I don't know that the Strait of Hormuz will open. And then mom has prepared the spaghetti. And he comes down from the attic. And the mom tries to be welcoming to the doomer. Why don't you come and tell us about what's wrong in the news these days? Classic Reader says, Trump came out today saying Iran just handed the U.S. a mysterious oil and gas related gift worth a tremendous amount of money as a sign that talks are going well with the right people. Yeah, I heard this, but I'm not even reporting about it because I'm like, what the fuck is this? Is it Iran giving some promise, some future promise? Is it them literally just giving oil? What is this? Or is this a rich person that has interest in Iran who is not part of the current regime, but who's kind of trying to buy his way into Trump and try to have himself declared some kind of leader in Iran? All of these psyops are possible, but we don't know what this gift is and whether it has credibility or whether it's Trump just divagating. Chris Asler says, one of Carl Schmitt's philosophical concepts was a temporary dictatorship. Another was the friend-enemy distinction. Okay, good to know. Sadie Edwards says, the smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but allow very lively debate within that spectrum. Oh yeah, that's a classical quote from, you say NC, I don't know who that is, but I remember this quote, I remember hearing it. President Trump, in a remarkable rambling session, says he basically succeeded at enacting regime change in Iran. That's another thing on which they've been dancing. Is that a regime change war or is it not? Pete Hegseth said both things and their contrary within three sentences at the beginning of the war.
You have another question? You haven't been here in a while.
Well, Iran, can you give us any more sense of who exactly in Iran it is, either Whitcomb or others you're speaking with?
Yeah, we had, I hate to say this in front of these young people. They're not children. I spoke to most of them. They sound like adults to me, even though they are sort of children, right? They'll always be your children. But I hate to say it, but we killed all their leadership, and then they met to choose new leaders, and we killed all of them. And now we have a new group, and we can easily do that, but let's see how they turn out. We have really...
Is he threatening of death the current group with whom he's trying to negotiate peace? We could easily do it to them too.
Regime change. You know, this is a change in the regime because the leaders are all very different than the ones that we started off with that created all those problems. So this was, I think we can say, Jason, this is regime change, right?
What makes you trust them?
So this is a change in the regime.
I don't trust anybody. I don't trust you. I mean, that's only because I know you. But if I didn't know you, I'd probably have more trust. But I don't trust anyone. Why do you say what makes you trust? Do you think I trust them? I don't trust them.
Then why bother talking to them?
Because they're going to make a deal. They're going to make a deal. They did something yesterday that was amazing, actually. They gave us a present, and the present arrived today.
A present. So what is this? Is this a symbolic present? Is it a delivery of oil? Is it some golden key? Is it a, I don't know, a Persian artifact?
It was a very big present worth a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not going to tell you what that present is, but it was a very significant prize. And they gave it to us, and they said they were going to give it, so that meant one thing to me, we're dealing with the right people.
Is that nuclear related?
No. We're dealing with the right people because they sent us some object that is unspecified. What is the object? A Bed Bath & Beyond gift card, $250, says Chronic Boom.
No, it wasn't nuclear related. It was oil and gas related. And it was a very nice thing they did. But what it showed me is that we're dealing with the right people. Because, you know, you don't know. Because the leadership was killed, all gone. Khomeini, all gone. As the expression goes, the past supreme leader. And then the new supreme leader was racked up, at a minimum, racked up pretty good. And everyone else was gone. And then many of the people in the third tier are gone. But we're dealing with a group of people that I think turn out. And the present, the gift they made to us was very significant. And they said they were going to do it, and it happened. And they're the only ones that could have done it. Jennifer?
Was it related to the Strait of Hormuz and the flow of
Yeah, it was related to the flow and to the Strait. Yeah, it was.
Are you negotiating on who's going to control the Strait from now on? No,
we'll have control of anything we want. Look, if we can end this without more lives being down, without knocking out $10 billion electric plants that are brand new and the apple of their eye, I'd like to be able to do that, you know? But they can't have certain things. I mean, you know the things. I don't have to go over the list, but again, it starts with no nuclear weapons. And
so now it's a list. And this was pointed out by Joe Kent. So it's like they've made a transition in the last few years between they can't have nuclear weapons, so they can't have nuclear anything. And now it's a list of things they can't have. The goalpost is moving. And that goalpost is exactly what the Israelis have used. Because if you move the goalpost, suddenly something that used to be acceptable as peace becomes unacceptable, and suddenly it's a situation of that justifies war. That's how they got Trump to do what they wanted. It's by moving the goalposts, and they've succeeded again. Now we're talking about a list of things that they can't have.
They've agreed to that. There won't be any nuclear weapons. They're not going to have, and they're not going to have enrichment, any of those things. But look, I hate to say that we're in a very good bargaining position, but. And I hate to say that they're defenseless because, you know, until that last missile is fired, they have little power. But we are in about the best bargaining position. We're way ahead of schedule. And again, they have no Navy and they have no Air Force and they have no missile protection. And most of their missiles are gone. Most of their launches we've killed. You know, we've killed about 82% of their launches.
So the end question is, do the Iranians, are they interested in maintaining instability for extended period? Can they do it with their current armaments? And can they do it in a way that continues escalation or forces Trump to save face into other strikes? That is the current question of the Iran war. It seems to me, though, that we are headed toward peace or ceasefire. Because I don't see why there would be a sustained desire on the Iran side to continue messing with the Strait of Hormuz they don't have much to gain into doing this other than revenge. And revenge is a very ephemeral feeling in these things. Revenge will always be in the heart of the people consuming social media and pushing these rooting. Yes, a missile has landed here, and yes, a missile has landed there. But generally, the leaders of these countries, they have other things to think about than revenge, and they are more like, okay, whatever it is that we have left, let's rebuild with this. In that scenario, Trump is under pressure in America to not do too much killing and not do an extended war. And Iran is invested in their own success, and they don't want to get stricken with, say, a strike on their infrastructure, like electricity and stuff. So that's two sides that want peace, mostly. Therefore, It is highly probable that we are still headed towards ceasefire, temporary peace, or whatever. But I don't see escalation as the biggest possibility still as of today. Renting Patriarch sends 1,000p. Thank you so much for the donation. He says, JF, how do I build a Lego castle? Oops, I meant to send this to Nick. So you're watching two shows at the same time? I don't think that Nick is live right now. Building a Lego castle. I guess you can. There's two ways. You can be creative Lego, where you just work from the originals and you build your entire own castle by your design. Or you can buy an already made Lego kit for castles. And then you're going to have just the right pieces and you can follow the model. That's the tension. There's always a choice between creativity and predetermination in Lego, which is why I loved the Lego movie so much. I think the Lego movie was pretty deep, because the Lego movie was about gluing the Legos and restricting liberty. And it was an allegorical metaphor on the idea of degrees of freedom and how if you glue the Lego together, you may gain permanence, but you lose something forever. In other words, the permanence is actually a loss rather than a gain. When you lock a system in place, you deprive the future possibilities of being greater than what it currently is. That's why liberty is so important to the growth of civilization. Stephen Robinson says, I think Iran won't stop until they think that the US and Israel will not strike them in the next year or five. The thing is, are you really going to just maintain bombing of ships against airstrikes? I mean, it's possible. It's possible that they have decided at this point we are unsatisfied by anything else than true written peace in which both Israel and the U.S. commit to never strike again until a certain date or never strike again at all. But that is a strong demand. Will we get the U.S. and Israel side to accept this? If they do, that could be a permanent peace. Now, the messaging of Iran has been that this is what they want. This is the only thing they're interested in. Permanent guarantee that this won't happen again. So that's at least the signals we get from the side of Iran. But will you get the Israelis and the warmongers and the Mark Levin of this world letting Trump sign this? I don't know. They really want... I don't know that they can be satisfied by anything. It's like Trump gave them everything that they were explicitly asking for. There's no more nuclear in Iran. You hated the regime? We killed three layers of them. We killed the regime, the replacement of the regime, and some of the third layer replacement of the regime. In theory, if what the Israelis have always been saying is true, they should be satisfied now. But satisfying the Israelis is a different thing. Thomas O'Ward sends $20 and he says, keep up the good fight, JF. So yeah, I mean, I think in a way you can kind of admire Trump despite the kneeling and despite the fact that I disagree with a lot of his recent actions. You can kind of admire that we are now at a point in this war where the Israelis have gotten everything they've ever asked for. And it's like, maybe down the line, there is a permanent peace that Trump will say, you guys, the Israelis, you're going to have to accept this because I just gave you everything you've ever wanted. And now at this point, you are capriciously trying to maintain a war for no reason at all. Maybe there is peace at the end of the tunnel.